Sukadev Goswami, in the second half of chapter 4, has offered his obeisances to the Lord as a prelude to his beginning to answer the questions of Maharaj Prickett. Maharaj Prickett had asked in the first half of the chapter about the Lord and his relationship with the material world, how he has created the material world, how he deals with his energies in such a way that the material world comes into existence. Now, in the beginning of chapter 5, he will begin, or actually in the last verse of the previous chapter in 4, Sukadev mentioned that the same questions were previously asked by Narada Muni to his father, Lord Brahma. And this isn't the last we shall hear of these questions about the creation, because in Canto 3, the process of creation, how Krishna creates the material world, will be described in 3 or perhaps even 4 different places in the third canto. So when something is repeated, there is a purpose for that. Repetition is considered a fault in literature. But when repetition, or when something is repeated in a very conscious way by the most literate and greatest and poetic of all authors, Srila Vyasadeva, we can understand there is a deep purpose. And what is the purpose? We need to have it very deep within our consciousness before we go on in hearing the Bhagavatam. We need to have it so deep, unmistakably deep, that Krishna is all-powerful. Why? Because there is such a tendency to project our own mentality on everyone else. When we deal with each other, we're generally dealing with our own minds, unless we know someone very well. We project the way we think and assume that everyone is thinking like us. So therefore, since that tendency is practically all pervading in the material world, atmavan manyate jagat, we see ourselves when we see the material world. Manyate, we see our own mind in jagat. Since that tendency is the tendency of every conditioned soul, when we hear later on of Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, which is the Ashraya Tattva, the purpose of the Bhagavatam, that tattva, that truth, that all the other aspects of the Bhagavatam, the Sarga, Vishaga, now we're going to hear about the Sarga, the primary creation of the Lord, that we have to have that in mind or we'll mistake Krishna's Leela, which so much resembles the activities of ordinary people. The activities of ordinary people in this world are a reflection of those eternal, pure spiritual activities in the spiritual world. So they so much resemble the activities that people engage in this world, especially the dealings between Krishna and the gopis, that we have to have it completely clear in our minds that these activities that Krishna performs are exactly the opposite of a materialistic activity, which is selfish and lustful. But Krishna's activities are not at all like that. They are transcendental. They have nothing at all to do with the three modes of material nature. So that point has to be hammered in again and again, once, bang. And we'll hear that once. We actually heard it in the first canto. Something about the Purusha avatars and that Krishna is the source of them. So when Krishna does something, he is all powerful. Like the king, when he wants to enjoy himself, he doesn't go to the prison house. He has no attraction for the activities of the prisoners. He is so much beyond that. And when he does go to the prison house, he is not under the laws of the prison. He is the maker of the laws. He is not under the laws. He's transcendental, beyond the laws. And the poor prisoners, in illusion, when the king enters to see what's going on and to help, the poor illusion prisoners may think what? Oh, look, the king is in here as well. The king has gotten caught and he is in prison as well. This is illusion. So this point, again and again, has to become firmly fixed in our consciousness. And based on that, based on understanding who Krishna is, Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all the kala and angsa, all the plenary parts and the parts of the plenary parts, then we will have access into the Ashraya Tattva. So this point has to be made again and again, because we need to assimilate it deeply. So now Sukadev is going to, he's paid his obeisances, asking the Lord to decorate his statements very poetically, asking Krishna to empower his words so he can describe something that, practically speaking, the creation is impossible to describe. And now his answer begins very authoritatively by saying the same questions were asked by Narada Muni to Brahma. And now I shall repeat to you, I shall repeat what I have heard in the cyclic succession as Brahma. First Narada will ask the questions in texts 1 through 8, and then the remaining sections in this up till the end of chapter 7, I believe. They will be the answers to these questions. So text 1. Sri Narada Muni asked Brahmaji, O chief amongst the demigods, O firstborn living entity, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the supersoul. We'll read from the second half of Prabhupada's purport. The inquisitive student must approach a qualified spiritual master to receive transcendental knowledge by surrender, submissive inquiries, and service. What verse of the Bhagavad Gita is that a paraphrasing of? Say it. Please. Upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshana. Exactly what the verse says. And how to get transcendental knowledge? Three things: surrender, inquiry, submissive inquiry, not challenging inquiries, and service. Sevaya. Knowledge received by submissive inquiries and service is more effective the knowledge received in exchange for money. A spiritual master in the line of the cyclic succession from Brahma and Narada has no demand for dollars and cents. A bona fide student has to satisfy him by sincere service to obtain knowledge of the relation and nature of the individual soul and the supersoul. So that makes the heart receptive to the knowledge. Just like the ground, before the seed is planted, the ground is plowed, it has to become fertile, and then watered, Otherwise, the plant will not grow. So, bhakti lata, the creeper of devotional service, is that kind of a plant. And here, as we heard yesterday, in Prabhupada's purports, how humility was so much the prerequisite for transcendental knowledge. So Narada continues, "My dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is the characteristic?" And the answer to this question is quite unique. It will come up very soon. We'll hear it in this class. "But what is the prime symptom of this world?" And the answer is in regard to human beings of the material world. Keep that in mind. What is its background? What is behind it? What is supporting it? Adishtananam. What is supporting the material world? How is it created? How is it conserved? Conserved means maintained. And under whose control is all this being done? Very reasonable, intelligent questions. Text 3. "My dear father, all this is known to you scientifically because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe, is within your grip, just like a walnut within the hand." Now, the actual word, the Sanskrit word that Narada uses isn't... What's the word for walnut? Walnut. I know it. I heard it recently, but I can't remember what it is. But here... Yes, but here it's amalak. So we know what an amalaka fruit is. In Vrindavan in the winter, you get them around. They're very wonderful fruits. They're the highest fruit in vitamin C. And they contain all the different rasas, all the different tastes. They are sweet, they are sour, they're this, they're that. Every taste is within this one fruit, quite unique. And you get them if you taste one. One after another, the tastes come, and the last one is sweet, which is good. So Prabhupada, because those reading this, if Prabhupada just said, you understand the universe just like a person has an amalaka fruit in his hand, the Westerners who were reading this wouldn't know if an amalaka fruit was as big as an elephant or as small as a pea. And actually, it's about the size of a walnut. So, how well one can understand every bump, every crease on a walnut if it's in one's hand or an amalaka fruit. So, Brahma has knowledge of the universe in that way, so complete, it's within his grasp. "My dear father," Narada continues, "what is the source of your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy, as the spider very easily creates the network of its cobweb and manifests its power of creation without being defeated by others? So also you yourself, by employment of your self-sufficient energy, do you create without any other's help? The spider gives off his web, and then he retracts the web all by himself. Are you, my dear father, just like that? Is everything coming from you because you are so powerful? Or do you have a source of knowledge?" Now, why is Narada asking this question? But before we get to that, he'll explain it very clearly in text 7. But Prabhupada's purport, short purport to 5, explains the point in a little more detail. Because he's asking, are you self-sufficient? Are you swatantra? Are you independent? Or are you dependent upon another for your great, great powers? So as soon as one is proved to be dependent, then he is not the absolute truth. He is not the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam. If he is resting on the power of another, then he is not janmad yasya yataha, the absolute truth, the source of everything. Prabhupada's purport, short purport. The best example of self-sufficiency is the sun. The sun does not require to be illuminated by any other body. Rather, it is the sun which helps all other illuminating agents. For in the presence of the sun, no other illuminating agent becomes prominent. Narada compared the position of Brahma to the self-sufficiency of the spider, who creates its own field of activities without any help by employment, without any other's help by employment of his own energetic creation of saliva. So the spider is, within its limited field, independent. The sun doesn't require illumination from another body to exhibit its own illumination. Indeed, if one takes any illuminating element to the sun, if one takes a flashlight, a torch, or tries to bring a fire to the sun, it's silly, it's ludicrous, because the sun is the source of all illumination. And everything is completely minimized. Every light is completely minimized when brought before the sun. So this is what he's asking. Are you dependent in your creation? Are you independent? Whatever we can understand by the nomenclature means the names, characteristics and features of a particular thing, superior, inferior, or equal, eternal, or temporary, is not created from any source other than that of your Lordship. Thou so great. So everything in Narada's experience is coming from Brahma. So therefore, he's saying, you're so powerful. Now what's causing him to ask the question? Why doesn't he simply assume that Brahma is all-powerful? Now he's going to explain that. We are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. Why? When we think of your great austerities in perfect discipline, and they'll be described in chapter 9, and also in the third canto, right in the beginning of the third canto. To gain the power to create, Lord Brahma performed austerities for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So can he be the absolute truth, the source of everything? Can he be God, the Supreme? If so, who is he performing austerities for the pleasure of? To gain the power, if he's the source of power, what does he need to gain? So therefore, Narada, having seen him perform austerities, even though Brahma has exhibited so much power, Narada has the hint in his consciousness that Brahma, his father, this all-powerful one, cannot actually be all-powerful. Because there is no process that one has to perform, can perform, to become God. It's that simple. When Krishna was 3 years old, 3 months old, he killed Putana. When Krishna was just a young boy, he lifted a hill which is known as? Yes. He didn't have to perform any austerities or perform a mystic yoga process to become God. You either are or you're not. And he is, and we're not. So when he thinks, even though he's seeing, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation, yet I've seen that you perform austerities. Therefore, it makes me wonder if there is someone above you. You are asking someone else for the power. So there must be someone above you. So please, tell me this. My dear father, you know everything, and you are the controller of all. Therefore, May all that I have inquired from you be kindly instructed to me so that I may be able to understand it as your student. A short comment by Srila Swami on text 7 and 8. His comment basically says Narada Muni's comments, but in different words. He says, although you are independent and powerful, yet I see you performing austerities to please another. Thus I am confused. Please enlighten me as to the answers to the questions I have posed, to the extent I have the capacity to understand. And this little end phrase on the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami is important. You enlighten me to the extent that I have the capacity to understand, because it is impossible for anyone to understand everything completely. No one actually can understand reality, because only Krishna knows everything. And how quickly we tend, so myself, to perceive what I understand as true and assume that that is true, or good, or bad, or fortunate, or unfortunate. No, our vision, our understanding of the present is so small. We don't understand everything that is going on now at the present. We only understand just a tiny, the smallest fragment of reality, and yet we are so, again, I'll speak for myself, arrogant, proud, thinking, yes, I am right. We're so determined and so sure, based on our own concepts, I am right, and everyone else, anyone who disagrees with me, is wrong. So arrogant. Because whatever we know, even the greatest brains can only understand the smallest amount of reality. Only Krishna knows everything. And therefore, as we have heard Prabhupada explain so many times, we accept Krishna's version of the truth. Therefore, when one hears Prabhupada or any devotee preaching, they're always quoting Shastra, and they judge what is real and what is not real, what is true, what is false by Krishna's words, especially Bhagavad Gita, the basic foundational book for preaching. So all of us, we have just a small capacity to understand, because we are tiny. Mamai vang so jiva loke. All the living entities, Krishna declares, in this world, tiny. Do we like it, being tiny and insignificant? It doesn't make any difference whether we like it or not. That's reality. We're tiny and insignificant. We tend to think everyone else is tiny and insignificant, but actually every living entity, and only... Therefore, God is great. So now Brahma begins his reply. My dear boy, Narada. What does Narada mean? It means da, means the giver. Yes, and Nara means to man. So what does Narada give to mankind? He gives bhakti. That is his special gift. And all over the world, and we see this in so many parts of the Bhagavatam, that Narada is the spiritual master, the giver of bhakti to so many living entities. Who can think of one that he gave bhakti to? Prahlad, yes. And another? Dhruva Maharaj. And? Magrari. Yes, that's the one I was thinking of. He was a hunter. Half so cruel-hearted. Enjoying the pain that he was giving to other living entities. But when Narada stopped him and released the animals he had half killed, he would half kill them because he was so, His heart was so twisted. His concept of what gave him pleasure was so perverse, wrong, cruel, that it gave him pleasure to see the suffering of others. A devotee can't even imagine that. He liked to see the animals with arrows in them flapping in pain. But when he came in Narada's presence, when Narada kindly came to his presence, he could not think a bad thought. Not even one bad thought. This is the power of a great devotee. And then Narada asked him something very wonderful, because he understood this person is so much in ignorance that how much can he take? His capacity is so small that he said, I want something from you. And in the presence of this saintly person, this Magrari's heart was melted a little bit and said, whatever you want, I'll give you. How many tiger skins do you want? How many bear skins do you want? How many deer skins? Whatever you want, I'll give you. Come to my house, I'll just give them to you. And Narada said, no, I don't want skins. I want you to stop half killing these animals. If you want to kill them fully, okay, but stop half killing them. So Magrari was amazed. What kind of request is that? Stop half killing them. And his reply is, why do you do that? Because my father taught me. This is my family tradition. And then he said, well, why do you say half killing? And then Narada explained to him that every bit of pain and difficulty we cause another, consciously, unconsciously, we ourselves have to suffer from that. That's also, amazingly enough, what Suniti, Dhruva's mother, when Dhruva was insulted because he was a Kshatriya, he was so angry, he wanted revenge. And his mother, and he came to his mother, he couldn't even speak, he was so upset. And his mother put him upon her lap and calmed him down and said, my dear boy, don't wish harm to others. What to speak of, like Magrari, actually causing harm to others, being so envious, not being able to tolerate the free life of another. But don't even think harmfully for others. Because he who wishes pain to others must himself suffer from that pain. Very, very heavy. Why is that heavy? Because the mind is so out of control. Someone bumps into us or someone does something we don't like and we're wishing they'd die maybe. Over something small, because the mind is so arrogant. Don't you realize who I am? This is demonic. Ishwaraham. Because unless one is Ishwara, controller, one can't be bogey, the enjoyer. But we are not in this world, and therefore in demonic consciousness is the most frustrating. So Brahma's reply to Narada, who is the giver of bhakti, my dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, you have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's purport, short purport. Brahmaji, being so questioned by Naradaji, congratulated him, for it is usual for the devotees to become very enthusiastic whenever they are questioned concerning the Almighty Personality of Godhead. That is a sign of a pure devotee of the Lord. What does that mean? And why? Without looking, unless you want to just look at it quickly to see. What does that mean? that the devotees, because Brahma congratulated, he thanked Narada for asking these questions because it would cause him to speak about Krishna. So why? What is so wonderful of that for a pure devotee? Yeah, they like to broadcast Krishna's glories and they like to taste. They like to give their valuable jewels, their wealth of realizations to others, and in doing that, they associate with Krishna. This is the wonder of spiritual wealth, that if we distribute it, it grows, just the opposite of material wealth. And if we become miserly and don't distribute it, then what happens? Huh? It leaks out from the jar. That is the sign of a pure devotee of the Lord, because in that Krishna Katha, the devotees, the hearer and the speaker, pure souls, when they are pure souls, they enjoy the spiritual atmosphere. They relish the taste of the association of Krishna. So such discourses on the transcendental activities of the Lord purify the atmosphere in which such discussions are held. And the devotees thus become enlivened while answering such questions. It is purifying both for the questioners and for one who answers the questions. The pure devotees are not satisfied only by knowing everything about the Lord, but are also eager to broadcast the information to others, for they want to see that the glories of the Lord are known to everyone. Thus the devotee feels satisfied when such an opportunity is offered to him. This is the basic principle of missionary activities. And Prabhupada's ISKCON is a missionary society. And Prabhupada, in a letter, once said, without preaching, the entire institution becomes rubbish. He used that word, very harsh word, rubbish, garbage, useless, thrown away. Without preaching, the institution becomes rubbish. So now he begins. Lord Brahma thanks him, Narada, so respectful in the dealings. Narada was so respectful, Brahma is respectful. So Brahma continues, whatever you have spoken about me is not false, because unless and until one is aware of the personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate truth beyond me, one is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. So what in one simple sentence is Brahma saying? Did you want to answer, Prabhu? Did you want you? Yeah. Forgot. Yeah. Did you want to answer? Okay. Would anyone like to answer? Yes. Yes. But he's saying that. That's very simple. That's boiled down to its essence. But there's another point in there as well. And what is the other point? Yes, but he's saying it's clear why someone would think this, that I'm the controller. Why? It appears he's so powerful. And there's one other word in there. One other phrase, yeah. Yes. So one who is an illusion, under the influence of Maya, is sure to be mistaken about Brahma's position or everything, actually speaking. The point being that when that's the specific function of Maya. Maya Javani Katsanam. It's like a curtain that separates our vision from Krishna. This is the function of Maya, specifically. Maya is not. We can see so many things, but we can't see Krishna. And this will be described later in the second of the Chatusloka Bhagavatam verses, that if we see anything as if it is separate from Krishna, anything, that is how Maya is defined. It means Maya's presence. So when Narada is mistaking Brahma for the Supreme, it's due to illusion. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. The frog in the well logic illustrates that a frog residing in the atmosphere and boundary of a well cannot imagine the length and breadth of the gigantic ocean. Such a frog, when informed of the gigantic length and breadth of the ocean, first of all does not believe that there is such an ocean. And if someone assures him that factually there is such a thing, the frog then begins to measure it by imagination, by means of pumping its belly as far as possible, with the result that the tiny abdomen of the frog bursts and the poor frog dies without any experience of the actual ocean. So the way that the little story goes is that there is a frog and he lives in his well. Now, how big is a well? Say the well is this big. And this is his concept of reality, of what water is. He sees this much water and he thinks this is everything. So another frog comes from the ocean. Somehow he's hopped his way to the ocean and he's hopped back. And he lands in that well and he sees his friend the frog and he says, I've just seen the ocean and this an incredible, incredible expanse of water. The entire ocean, I've seen it. It's huge. So the frog in the well says, no. It doesn't. Who can say there? This is everything here. But really, I've seen it, and it's huge. So then the frog in the well starts thinking, huge. It must be a lot bigger than the water in my well. It's three times as big. The ocean is three times as big as my well. And he puffs up his chest to show how big it is. No, no, you don't understand how big the ocean actually is. It's huge. It's immeasurable. You mean it's six times as big as my well? No, you don't understand. And he puffs up his chest more. You mean it's 20 times as big as my well? But he actually has no conceptual ability to understand what it is because his mind is caught in this tiny well. So what is the comparison being made? What is the comparison being made? What is the frog in the well compared to? Huh? Scientists and anyone who is trying to conceive from his tiny position of how great Krishna is, how great God is. With the finite, tiny, limited mind, we cannot understand. It is impossible. No matter how much we puff ourselves up and how proud we become of our abilities, all we will find is our own death. So, the frog bursts and the poor frog dies without any experience of the actual ocean. Similarly, the material scientists also want to challenge the inconceivable potency of the Lord by measuring him with their frog-like brains and their scientific achievements. But at the end, they simply die unsuccessfully like the frog. And Prabhupada's purport goes on to explain how Narada's illusion Not understanding Brahma's position was a gift of Krishna. So to get Brahma to speak about the Lord, just like Arjuna's so-called illusion on the battle of Kurukshetra was Krishna's desire. So anyone who is in illusion, they will not be able to see the Lord. Text 11. Now he gets to the point. I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence known as the Brahma Jyoti. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. So Brahma is the secondary creator, and that creation we'll hear in the 10th chapter of this canto is called the Vishaga, or the secondary creation, based on the primary creation. Atra Saga Vishagas Cha Stanam Poshanam Utaya Manvatara Ishanokita Niroda Mukti Asraya. Yes. And everything is taking shelter of the Asraya, the shelter. So the primary creation is the one that the Lord makes, like all the seeds, and then Brahma, as Prabhupada will explain in his purport, is like the garden who plants the seeds. His creation is based on that which is already created. So who can say they're actually creators? Just like there was Prabhupada was speaking to this one man, it was somewhere in India in the early days, and the man was a big manufacturer of glass. And he was very wealthy due to his manufacture of glass. So Prabhupada said to him that you're a cheater. Why? Because you're not the manufacturer of the glass. You're just taking that which is already manufactured, the sand, manufactured by Krishna. No, he didn't call him a cheater. He called him a thief. Big wealthy manufacturer called him a thief. Why? Because you're stealing from Krishna and you're saying it's yours and you're the manufacturer. Because the glass is made from the sand. So the man replied, but I give donations. And Prabhupada's reply was, oh, you're an honest thief. But who will think like this? Only someone without pretension, who doesn't have a demonic attitude. Because the demonic person is thinking, I am the controller and therefore I can enjoy. So I get something to control and somehow I manipulate it so I can enjoy. I squeeze money out of the sand, make glass, and then I'm wealthy. I can give some donations and I will enjoy. But who does it belong to? Dena Eva, Krishna says. If one takes from Krishna without giving to him really everything, because it's his, he's a thief, a person who doesn't give like that. So that condemns every person within this material world as a thief, and thieves must be punished. This is the standard of pure devotional service, that nothing is mine, everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be used in his service. This is the standard of pure devotional service. Lord Brahmaji said to Narada that his impression that Brahma was not the supreme authority in the creation was correct. Sometimes less intelligent men have the foolish impression that Brahma is the cause of all causes. But Narada wanted to clear the matter by the statements of Brahmaji, the supreme authority in the universe. As the decision of the supreme court of a state is final, similarly the judgment of Brahmaji, the supreme authority in the universe, is final in the Vedic process of acquiring knowledge. As we have already affirmed in the previous verse, Naradaji was a liberated soul. Therefore, he was not one of the less intelligent men who accepts a false god or gods in their own ways. He represented himself as less intelligent and yet intelligently presented a doubt to be cleared by the supreme authority so that the uninformed might take note of it and be rightly informed about the intricacies of creation and the Creator. And then the final paragraph of the purport. One should not expect the Lord to create like a blacksmith with a hammer and other instruments. In other words, bang, 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 he does everything himself. No. The Lord creates by his potencies. He has his multifarious potencies, parasya shaktiya vividaiva shriyate, just as the small seed of a banyan fruit has the potency to create a big banyan tree. The Lord disseminates all varieties of seeds by his potential Brahma Jyoti, Sraruchija, and the seeds are made to develop by the watering process of persons like Brahma. Brahma cannot create the seeds, but he can manifest the seed into a tree, just as a gardener helps plants and orchards to grow by the watering process. So this, the seeds all over the creation that Brahma will manifest, that is called the universal form, the Virata Rupa. And that we will come to that. This is the primary creation of the Lord. And then very subtle, and then manifest, and then Brahma brings that into its gross form in the material world. The example cited here of the sun is very appropriate. In the material world, the sun is the cause of all illumination, fire, electricity, the rays of the moon, etc. All luminaries in the sky are creations of the sun. The sun is the creation of the Brahma Jyoti, and the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Lord. Thus, the ultimate cause of creation is the Lord. So everything, the background of everything, that was the question that was asked, is Krishna. Everything. There is nothing separate from his creation. Nothing can happen to anyone where Krishna's hand has not touched it. 12. So then, immediately after describing the Lord's position, I offer my obeisances. Tasmai namo bhagavate vasudevaya dhimahi yanmayaya durjaya mambadanti jagat gurum. I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the Supreme Controller. This verse, where he's offering his obeisances, Brahma is offering his obeisances to Vasudevas, and it will come up again with Lord Narayan very soon, but in the second chapter, in the perhaps the 20th of the first canto, 29, 28, 29. Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Paramaka, Vasudeva Parayoga, Vasudeva Parakriya, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Dapa, Vasudeva Parodamo, Vasudeva Paragati. The ultimate object of knowledge is Vasudev, is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruit of activities are ultimately rewarded by him alone. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. So this is Vasudev. He is the one who is doing everything. He is Bhagawan. And ultimately, Bhagawan is Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. We'll read from the second half of Prabhupada's purport. Brahmaji, to text 12. Brahmaji is conscious of his actual position. And he knows how less intelligent persons, bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord, whimsically accept anyone and everyone as God. A responsible personality like Brahmaji refuses to be addressed as the Supreme Lord by his disciples or subordinates. But foolish persons praised by men of the nature of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses feel flattered to be addressed as the Supreme Lord. Why such persons take pleasure in being addressed as God, or why such persons are addressed as God by foolish admirers, is explained in the following verse. And the following verse is the answer to the question of what is the symptom of the material world amongst humans, especially. Vilajjamanaya yasya statum ikshapate muyu vimohita vakattante mama mitti durdiya. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence of the Lord. It cannot conquer the Lord. Being ashamed of her position, so she cannot touch the Lord. She cannot become close to the Lord. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. And this is the first grade symptom of the of someone in the illusory energy. They talk nonsense. Oh, this is mine and I am this. I am this person's husband. I am this person's father. I own this. I. This is mine. This is the effect of the illusory energy upon someone. Also in the 7th chapter, text 47, there's one line, very important line, very nice line, which is often quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami. Maya paraiti abhimukhe cha vilajamana. Very, very similar. That the illusory energy, maya, paraiti, it cannot come in front of the Lord. It goes away. So how is it possible? This one line, abhimukhe cha vilajamanam, it is ashamed of its position. Maya is ashamed of her position, and she cannot stand in front of the Lord. How is it possible then? This one verse, this one line, as the one we just read in text 13, it defeats the entire Mayavadi philosophy that somehow or another, that God becomes overwhelmed by illusion and becomes jiva. One line, one verse, all entire Mayavadi philosophy out the window. That we are God and we have forgotten. We are actually God and have forgotten. Now why does God, so the one of the Mayavadi answers to that, well, God puts himself into illusion. So much suffering, he's putting himself into the position of a pig, of a dog. So much suffering of a cat, a rat. God is doing this for pleasure. This is how he's going to get his enjoyment. Put himself, self-delude himself, so he thinks he's a rat and a mouse and a flea on the rat. Absurd. Absurd. When the king, when he comes to the prison house, he's always the king. He never has to become a prisoner. God never has to become a rat, a flea on the rat, and a parasite on the flea. It's absurd. This philosophy is absurd. We are God, but have forgotten. And yet, amazingly enough, there are so many, almost every religion and group teaches this philosophy, subtly or grossly, that we are God and we have forgotten. What do you think? It's not likely. Very unlikely. That's the greatest illusion. It's the last snare of Maya. Even when one understands he's eternal, the last his concept of himself, his illusion is so great. Anything other than accept that I'm a servant of God. Anything. I am God. I'll accept that. But I won't accept anything but accept I'm a servant of God. So how powerful the illusory energy is. And how averse against accepting our actual position as Krishna's servant. How the jiva soul, turning his back on Krishna, is so averse to Krishna. Even after understanding he's an eternal soul, he won't accept that I am Krishna's servant. I'm a servant of God. So determinedly envious of his actual position, Maya. So Vilaja Manaya Yasya Statum Ikshapate Muya Vamohita Vikantante Mamaham Itidudya. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of, it is I, it is mine. So this is in 252. Narada has asked, what is the primary, the symptoms of this manifestation? And this is it. From Prabhupada's purport, we'll read just a little bit. The invincibly powerful deluding energy of the personality of Godhead, or the third energy representing nescience, can bewilder the entire world of animation, but still she is not strong enough to be able to stand in front of the Supreme Lord. Nescience is behind the personality of Godhead, where she is powerful enough to mislead the living entities. And the primary symptom of bewildered persons is that they talk nonsense. Mama Maya Dharatyaya, Krishna says, it's very difficult to overcome this. But it is possible. How? What's the rest of the verse? Manmana, Bhava Madbhakto. What else does surrender mean? Reject. Oh, to take all one's... What was the one word I couldn't hear? Reject, yes. What else does surrender mean? Yes. Take tribulations as the mercy. What else? Surrender to the instructions of one's spiritual master. What else? Unfavorable. Accept everything favorable. This is the definition. Yeah. Go tripte. Varanam tata. Be completely dependent upon Krishna. Is that a frightening thought? But at the time of death, if that's a frightening thought, we're going to be very frightened because we won't have anything else. Because now we rely on so many things to protect us. But none of those will help us at that time. So practice. Life is practice for that. Go tripte varanam tata. Krishna, I am yours. I'm your servant. So let me serve you, and in that service, let me remain under your protection and deal with me as you like. Maro bi ra ko bi yo ischa tohara nitya dasa tua. Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Okay, thank you very much. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Nitya Tua, yes? Yes, I'm yours. Any questions or comments? So you're saying that
still possessions that are possessed with initial.
I don't know. As long as I'm not the object of it, yeah, someone else you can. Yeah.
Well, look, you know, that's a gross like example.
See, this is going to be discussed in more detail in the 9th chapter, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd verse, especially in the first verse. But we can discuss it some now. If we think that it is mine, then that is Maya. If we think that it's under my care, we could also say it's under my care but think it's mine, so we can bluff ourselves and others like that. But if we actually think it's under my care, and Krishna has placed it under my care, and it's required for service, then we act practically in that way. But clearly it's not yours. But that's what I'm saying. So I'm not criticizing you for saying no. What I'm saying is if it's under your care, you have to do the proper thing for it. But if you think that it's yours, if you think that it's Krishna's, and it's under your care, then you'll take care of it. But we have also seen, if you look at the difference between the cars that are Krishna's and the cars that belong to individuals, there's a tendency for the cars to Krishna's to get trashed, as you're saying. That's Australian for not taken care of. The perfect consciousness is that Krishna has placed this under my care, and I should use it, make sure it's used properly in his service, and it is taken care of. It's under my care, but it's Krishna's. That's proper consciousness. So if we note in ourselves the tendency to think that it's mine, we should understand that we have become somewhat detached from the sense of ownership, but yet still remain attached to the caring for it as Krishna's. And then we also may have to understand our own limitations. We may not be able to rise to that standard. Okay, so we try to minimize what we consider ours. There's someone, one of Prabhupada's purports, he says, he explains that a sannyas may think that stick, the danda, is his. He may really identify it as being his, and maybe his water pot or whatever. But that is so much minimized and not worthy of criticism compared to what other people may think are theirs. So much. So we look at it in different perspectives. And you are using that. You may think it's yours, and there may be some tinges of illusion, for example. Not that there are, but there may be. But then you're using it completely in Krishna's service too. So that might be our capacity.
That's usually the case.
Well, according to what we think we possess as ours, we're going to be fearful in this world. We'll be threatened by everything. So, and also, Janmaishwarya Shrutashi Vira Edamanamana Pumam Na Eva Arhati Abhidatum Pai Tama Kinshina Gocharam.
But we still have a strong thing on the objects.
Prabhupada will explain in the purport, amongst karmis, the sense of mine is prominent. Amongst jnanis, the sense of I is prominent. Of the two, the sense of I is much more pure on one level, but it's much worse than the sense of mind. Because how much pleasure can you ultimately get out of your van? It's a headache. You know that. So it's an attachment that who cares ultimately. So there's a tendency for that naturally to creep into devotional service. Okay? So we minimize it. So therefore, simple living. We try not to accumulate things, because all those, to have possessions means pain, it means fear, it means anxiety. So we try to minimize it and take care of what we have, use what we have in Krishna's service, and try to conceive of it as His. And take care of it in that light. We, in the old days of the movement, no one would ever, when they had a book or anything, what would the devotees write in their book? In the care of the person's name. And I saw one, there was a Tulsi handbook that came out from somewhere, and it said in it that anyone who photocopies this, I curse them, or something like that. Different mood. I'm sure they were thinking the prophets were going for Tulsi Devi, but just maybe I thought it was a little extreme myself. Any other comments on this, or any other questions? In the care of, and when something's in the care of, we should be very trustworthy and caring if Krishna's giving us. Especially, say, if Krishna gives us money and things like that, we should be very, very careful not to think of it as ours, not to be averse to it either. But to think, Krishna has given me this to use in His service, and I should make sure that nothing is wasted. So when we have possessions in Krishna's service, we should care for them in that mood, and carefully care for them. Any other questions or comments? Yes. According to my capacity. Yes. On your capacity? Probably not. You might be able to improve on the translation, but not on the content. I kind of doubt it. No, not in that mood. Because when someone tried to, Savabhoma Bhattacharya, or when Balava Bhatta said something to surpass Sridhar Swami, he said, anyone who doesn't accept the Swami is a prostitute, because in Sanskrit and Bengali, Swami means, that's the actual word for husband. So if you don't accept the Swami, Srila Swami, Swami Charan, the husband, then prostitute. So you might want to clarify it, but, or no, improve, not the right, not concept. You might improve the translation, though. Maybe the translation might be imperfect, but we heard yesterday how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur took something forward that Srila Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami have stated, but we leave that for Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. If you just reorganize your thinking about it, we'll easily be able to hear that probably the wonderful gem you would like to bestow on us. Yes, yes. Yes. Yeah. But if you probably ask that same person the question now, he would probably respond differently. Because it's many, many years. And we knew so many things many years ago. Now we are more humble about what we are sure about. Yes, to me it seems that if you can present it shows that you've worked. You've worked, you've thought about it deeply, and here's what you've come up with, and you're placing it before a person that you trust, that they are in a position to analyze or judge or what you said, and then they could accept it, add something, take something away. So now you're taking the other side, which is also a good thing to do, Lord Chaitanya. And we'll hear about this on Thursday night, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And we heard about Vishwarup doing this. This is, and Prabhupada even said that this is how to learn how to preach. You take both sides of the argument. Take one side and then you make a strong presentation, then you rip apart your strong explanation, and then establish another conclusion, and then you establish the original conclusion again. So now your suggestion is that it shouldn't be too lengthy. Well, that's good. Considerate of the person who's listening. No, it doesn't say that you shouldn't try to understand. It says you can't understand. You're not just like a child. A child can't understand the way his father and mother are thinking and why he's saying what he's doing. But he should try to analyze it as far as his capacity is. That's my understanding. Why is he said like this and like this? But, and then you can present that for clarification too. We ask questions to try to understand. Not that everything is so mystical. Or say if your spiritual master says, go out and bring me 1 liter of milk. Oh, how can I understand this? You have to understand. And if you don't understand, you ask questions to clarify. But we'll never, any more than a child can fully understand his parents. How can he? So many times that happens, you know, when your parents did something. And then when you're 50 years old or 40 years old, oh, that's why they told me that. Yes, now I understand why they were cautioning me. But it takes 30 years. When your maturity, your conceptualizations have expanded like that. But not that we shouldn't. But we shouldn't think that we do understand. We should try to analyze according to our capacity. I wrote a book about Prabhupada and his dealings with me. And I was confronted with that question because Prabhupada did certain things and he acted in a certain way and I was writing about it. So if I took the side that, oh, it's impossible, I shouldn't try to understand why he did anything. First of all, I thought that was silly because then I wouldn't learn anything from all the things he told me. But according to my capacity, I was able to understand, but I thought about what he told me deeply. And I tried to come to conclusions according to my capacity. Not thinking that I reached the ultimate limit of understanding everything that he told me, but otherwise, how would I learn from anything? Why is he instructing me in this way? And your intelligence too. Don't neglect your intelligence. But it's just insufficient to understand God. But it's the best we have. It differentiates us from humans. No, from animals. You should use our intelligence to understand. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is written. We should use our intelligence to understand. But understand that intelligence alone is insufficient. But based on Shastra, it's very good too. And think about and discuss. How could a person who has an intelligence not use it? It's a perfect way to drive them crazy. Use it in the service of Krishna. Yes, think about it. Of course, think about it. You read Bhagavad Gita and you don't think about what you read? It's quite extreme. You may even not be able to understand this and that, and then you have questions. That's very good. No. Anyway, I'll never agree to those principles that we shouldn't think about things and we shouldn't use our intelligence in scrutinizingly studying. Why are all the books there? Prabhupada spent so much of his time writing books, and he's distributing books. Why? Read them, but don't think about them? Ha! Yeah. And we speak about them. And not only that, here's one person talking. And then that's what istigosti means. We speak around the topic. Now we should only hear what other people say about it. And this is what he said, discuss it threadbare. Threadbare means till there's nothing left, practically. So, and then hearing each other's realizations, then what happens? Because I see it from my point of view, clearly. And then you'll see it from your point of view, and you'll see, and on and on. And we'll all have different points of view. And that way, by hearing from each other, our affection and respect will grow. Because, yeah? I don't think your questions are foolish, by the way. I think they're very pertinent. But how many years ago was that? So, where is he now? You know. I don't know, but you know. Is he? Would you think he would still be the same now? But I'm making the point, I'm trying to make the point, that in immaturity we'll say so many things like that. We think we know so much. But when an immature baby scientist thinks he's very proud, but a great scientist is very humble. In immaturity, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. You've heard that expression? And there's one of the anartas, basic anartas. What is that where the immature means I know everything, basically. But as there's a little saying in English that it's quite American, so excuse me, that a boy who's 22 years old, he comments, "My father learned so many things. My father learned so many things by the time I became 21. When I was 16, he didn't know anything. But now I'm 21, he's learned so many things since then." So it's a joke, meaning that when you're 16, you think you know everything. By the time you're 21, you have more experience of the world and you realize that life is a lot more complicated. Youthful enthusiasm. Utsamayi. Utsahanmayi. It's the enthusiasm of youth. So Prabhupada took that and he engaged it. Because how do you make a person mature quickly? It's very difficult. Very rare a person will become mature young. So they have to go through life. Life has its way of maturing one. Mostly through the process of? Yes, suffering. That's my experience anyway. Maturing one, softening the heart, making one humble, and giving one facility to pray in that way. And take shelter of Krishna, removing one's pride. Like that. But what happens if other people have questions? That's my only fear. Anyone else have any questions? Yes. No one can understand, because he's omniscient. Only Krishna is omniscient. He knows everything. Are you asking, does a pure devotee know everything? And the answer is? Yeah, he doesn't know everything. He's not God. That position is reserved for Krishna. One time, Prabhupada was asked that question, because it says in the Bhagavatam that about Sukadeva, you know everything, you're like the super soul, you can enter everywhere. And Prabhupada was asked that question by Jayadvaita Swami in a morning walk, I think it was in Hyderabad. And Prabhupada said, no. His knowing everything means, he knows about preaching. That's what Prabhupada's answer was. But in hearing from Prabhupada speak on this many times, and also thinking about it a lot, what I've understood, in the sense he knows everything, it also means that he has a point of view because he knows Krishna. What Prabhupada would often say, because one who knows Krishna, he knows everything. So what does he mean by that? Does he know how to fix a car? Does he know how to program in C++? Does he know how many grains of sand are in the at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean? No. But it means that from the point of view of Krishna consciousness, he has that a reference point by which he can understand everything in that perspective. That's for some reason I'm telling you. That's my understanding of what he has a perspective. And indeed, Prabhupada, when anyone would talk to him, a scientist, anything, he would be able to speak from the point of view of Bhagavad Gita. But I want to say one other thing. So then, when that devotee, Jayadvaita Swami, asked Prabhupada, does a pure devotee know everything? The other devotees who were with on that walk, they said, oh, that question was offensive. So then Jayadvaita Maharaj, being very clear thinking and intelligent, he asked Prabhupada, was that question offensive? And Prabhupada said, no, it was ignorant. I thought about that one also, that if we think that these sincere questions, everything is offensive and like that, and when actually it's just ignorance, we don't know what the truth is in regard to these complicated topics, where there's one statement says one thing and another statement says another thing sometimes. So if we think so much that everything is offensive, 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 then we will forever remain in ignorance. That was my conclusion on that. Because sometimes it's better to ask questions in private, though, I think. Because when you're talking to someone who's been a devotee for 25 years or 30 years, you'll speak in one way. And if you're talking to someone who's just new, should you surrender to your authorities, or you should think deeply about everything? And you would answer the question differently depending upon who's asking the question. And sometimes when there's young devotees and old devotees, it's really difficult to answer certain kinds of questions when everyone is together. So sometimes certain questions are better to ask privately. But this will be the end too, because I'm getting hungry. Excuse me. Yes. But comparative religion is for very advanced devotees, more advanced devotees. Because if it confuses us, it's for more advanced devotees than us. And or another way answer, because one of the characteristics of a Madhyamadhikari is his ability to reconcile opposing things. So maybe our Madhyam has to come up a little bit. But how do we know we're right? Can we be right without them being wrong? And Prabhupada, what was his main criticism of the Christians, for example? Their meat eating. That, he wouldn't budge an inch on that. Anyway, I can tell this question is very, it's coming from some experience, and it's going to be hard to express it. How can we know for sure that we are right? Well, what can anyone answer that question? Yes, go ahead. Huh? Also, there's so many people to talk to, so many more advanced devotees to speak to. You mean, and if the question is, how do we know that we're on the right path as opposed to the wrong path? Are you sure that you're sure? Okay. You reconcile some, and then we'll talk about it later. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhakti.